This is the Eye on Potatoes, brought to you by the National Potato Council. The Eye is the place to tune in for conversations with growers and thought leaders on advocacy, production, and all things potatoes. Now, here's your host, Lane Nordland.
Hello, friends, and welcome back to the Eye on Potatoes podcast. Lane Nordland, happy to be with you here once again. For those of you joining us for the very first time, thanks for tuning in to the podcast and joining the conversation. And for our return listeners, thank you so much for coming back and subscribing on your Apple and Android devices. Now, we're going to continue to talk about issues that impact you and I out in the countryside, and today our focus of our conversation will focus on trade here in North America and across the world. And standing by with us today in Seattle is Mr. Matt Lance. He's the VP of Global Access with Bryant Christie. We're going to be discussing trade here in North America and internationally with all of our guests here today. But starting off with Matt, we'll focus on the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement. But Matt, how are things out in the PNW here today?
Things are good here. Thanks for having me, Lane. I'm very pleased to join you.
Well, I'm happy to have you on here, too. And many of our friends listening may be familiar with you. You've mentioned you have over 20 years of work in the potato field and making sure that the industry has opportunities on the international scale. What's it been like working with the potato industry over the past 20 years?
It's been wonderful. They were essentially the first agriculture industry I ever worked with. I have a lot of mentors and friends in the industry. I started out working with the Washington State Potato Commission and the Oregon Potato Commission, and then grew on to Idaho and eventually the National Potato Council and Potatoes USA. I've traveled a lot with potatoes. I've done a lot of work with potatoes, and frankly, I've eaten a lot of potatoes. So I'm happy to help wherever I can on the international trade part for them.
And maybe let's expand more on the role that Bryant Christie plays just on trade in general. The team that you have working there is, of course, not just on potato issues, but a wide variety of trade issues as well.
Right. We're an international affairs consulting firm. We're based in Seattle and Sacramento. We have about 41 people who work for us. And our job is focused on agriculture and food. And we try to handle international agricultural trade issues for our clients. So my job is essentially to open foreign markets for our clients and to make sure they stay open and address any challenges they might have and foresee those challenges as they're coming down the road.
Matt, as we've moved here into 2020, it's hard to believe that we're in the year 2020 already, but at the end of 2019, we saw a lot of progress on trade deals, whether it was the trade agreements with Japan. Right at the end of the year, of course, we heard a lot of commotion on the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement, and the day that we're actually recording this show, the Senate Finance Committee actually voted to send the USMCA to the full Senate floor. So at the time of this recording, we're still waiting for the full Senate to take action on that trade agreement. Let's just talk about the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement and the importance of actually getting this deal passed and that the U.S. did not pull out of the original NAFTA deal, because it had a really big impact on the potato industry with exports going to Mexico and to Canada as well.
That's right. And the USMCA is a good deal. It's something that we in the potato industry need to have passed in order to continue what our strong growth in Mexico especially, but also in Canada. The real challenge with USMCA was the possibility that the United States might withdraw from NAFTA. So NAFTA was signed and agreed to in 1994. And as a result of NAFTA, over the course of maybe 5 or 6 years, I'm going to focus on Mexico. Mexico agreed to eliminate its tariffs on a lot of U.S. products, including potatoes. By 1999, we were able to export duty-free our French fries into Mexico. And if you look at the trade numbers since then, they have taken off. And the advantage we had with this was that we had a zero duty. Of course, Canada had a zero duty in NAFTA for our fries. But other competitors like Europe still faced a higher tariff. With the growth of quick service restaurants in Mexico, our trade numbers have just skyrocketed. Mexico is now, I believe, our third largest export market. We ship about around $100 million worth of frozen fries to Mexico each year. Forgive me, John Tusper, and he at Potatoes USA will know the exact numbers. But that's important. If we had withdrawn from NAFTA, so when the president announced he wanted to renegotiate NAFTA, and it needed to be renegotiated, it was negotiated before there was an internet, so that needed to be polished up. And but our biggest concern was making sure nothing happened to that zero tariff in Mexico, especially. If something happened to that, it would affect our ability to do exports to the market. We have Europe trying to get lower tariffs over there, and so it was really important to keep that. The good news is in USMCA, NAFTA will remain, or the zero duties negotiated in NAFTA will remain, and so we'll still continue to have access to the Mexican and the Canadian market without any tariffs on our potato products going in either direction.
And just looking at those export numbers that were established under NAFTA, frozen product to Mexico, frozen potatoes, excuse me, exports to Mexico, $122 million. The dehydrated potatoes, $32 million. Fresh potatoes, around $37 million in export value. That's a big chunk of the U.S. potato industry. And seeing that opportunity to continue to have that access, I know producers are breathing a little easier as we move into the new year. But so really not a lot has changed in terms of the actual trade agreement, obviously, in USMCA for potato trade. But we did see some enhanced sanitary and phytosanitary language in USMCA. Could you expand on that?
So this is an opportunity that we can pursue additional phytosanitary issues through USMCA. A couple years ago, the Trans-Pacific Partnership included this phytosanitary language, and so it was basically modernized language from the last 20 years. And so this type of information was included in USMCA. It is a big priority for the United States to have fresh potato access, table stock access throughout all of Mexico, and it is a very, very sensitive and political issue. We've been working on it for 15 years or so. It's up at the Mexican Supreme Court. USMCA and the phytosanitary area is not necessarily going to resolve that, but it also will give us some additional opportunities as we're going through this negotiation to turn to USMCA saying, we've made commitments to modernize phytosanitary issues. It helps us on the international angle with that on our fresh potato market access.
Well, and let's expand upon that, the Mexico fresh access. How did that really come about, and how is this hindering the opportunities for U.S. potato exports, those fresh exports to Mexico, and what's it looking like on the court end of things for a win for U.S. producers possibly?
Well, this is, I would say, the highest international priority for the U.S. potato industry. It's incredibly important. Just to lay the groundwork, we currently have access to the border region of Mexico. It's a 26-kilometer region. And as you just mentioned, we ship about $37 million worth of fresh potatoes to that region. That's table stock and shipping potatoes. Our goal all along has been to have access to the entirety of Mexico. It is a large country of 87 million consumers or so, and we would like to have access to the entire market. The challenge is there is a very strong potato industry in Mexico, and they really do not want our product in the market and have worked hard to prevent us from having access to the market. They've couched those arguments in phytosanitary terms, saying that our products that we have exported have had pests and diseases, and we have been able to counter those arguments pretty effectively, even in international fora, saying that the pests either exist in Mexico or are not a concern of Mexico. And so it actually shows that we're shipping actually very, very clean product down into Mexico. Back in 2014, an agreement was reached to open the market. And the market was opened, and we were able to ship to the entirety of Mexico. And we shipped from May until early June for about 3 weeks. And then Mexican officials filed a court case against our products, saying that the agreement did not follow Mexican rules. And it has been tied up in the courts since then for about 5 years or so. It's worked its way through the courts. There were multiple cases, over 10 cases filed, largely dealing with quarantine issues that we've already addressed, but also with, does the Mexican government have the authority to negotiate this? It's now all the way up at the Mexican Supreme Court. This effort's being led by the National Potato Council and attorneys in Mexico on our side, with the support of Potatoes USA. We have U.S. Task, technical assistance for specialty crop funds that are helping to cover that. And this has gotten up to be among the highest bilateral issues between the United States and Mexico. When will the Supreme Court rule? That is to be determined. We're hoping in 2020. You know, Cam Quarles at the National Potato Council has the most recent information on this. But let me tell you what will happen after, assuming we have a positive review. What will happen next is we have to go back and finalize the market access agreement that we negotiated. And we negotiated another one in 2017. I just did a review of this about 4 months ago. It's pretty dang good. And it is our hope on the U.S. side that if we win the court cases, we'll go into the Mexican government and say, we had a deal in 2017. Let's ink that. If we need a change or two, that's fine. There is the possibility, however, if we win, they might say, well, now we have to go back and start over and do a pest risk assessment again and go down that path. We'll certainly fight that if possible. It's a very, very political issue, very challenging issue, but it's worth fighting because it would change the face of the U.S. potato industry if we had access to that entire market.
What is the expectation? Of course, we mentioned that $37 million in fresh potatoes are currently going into that certain region of Mexico. What is the industry guess of how many more millions that would add, having more access to the Mexican market?
Oh, I think $100 to $150 million annually to the market. So it would grow substantially.
Well, I think that's it's just so interesting, the dynamics of international trade and throwing in also these 232 tariffs, these steel and aluminum tariffs that the Trump administration has placed on many trading partners, specifically with China and also with our USMCA partners with Mexico and Canada. We mentioned that, I mentioned before our conversation here that back in May 2019, those 232 tariffs were removed on Canada and on Mexico. And also, they were used as a negotiating tool, obviously, with these trading partners. But how did these steel and aluminum tariffs really, how did it change the game in these renegotiations and in kicking off these renegotiations?
Yeah, it's a really good question, Lane. And it really showed us what would have happened if we had lost NAFTA. So essentially what happened is the Trump administration put steel and aluminum tariffs on numerous countries around the world, including China, including Japan, including Mexico and Canada. And European Union. And this was back in 2018, in June 2018. And they put a, and those countries responded in kind, and they came out with their own retaliation list against us. China has done that. Canada did so against us, only it was pretty limited to kind of some dehydrated product. But the big issue for us was Canada, Mexico responded with a 20% tariff on U.S. frozen fries, and that went into effect immediately. So it's essentially if NAFTA had gone away. So we were paying back at the previous pre-NAFTA most favored nation level of 20%. Those tariffs, those retaliatory tariffs were in effect through May of 2019. So almost exactly a year. And if you look at the trade numbers from for U.S. fries, to Mexico, you'll find that we fell by about a quarter, actually by 26%. So our fry exports fell because we had to pay a 20% tariff where Canada and the European Union did not. And what, if you look at the trade numbers, what happened is products started sourcing from Canada because it was still the zero duty on Canada. And as a result, Canadian fries would drive right through the United States and go to Mexico and supply the need for their quick service restaurants. And importantly, Europe for the first time gained a toehold in Mexico. And that's never happened before. So all of a sudden we see European fries going into Mexico. And, you know, once you have contacts established, then it becomes more competitive. So the net effect of those steel tariffs and the retaliation on Mexico was to see our fry exports fall by about 26%. Now, once those tariffs were removed last May, the trade numbers show bounce back to about our normal standards. Takes a little while to get back to it, but we're back down to zero. And, you know, it's certainly easier to source from the United States. We're a lot closer to Mexico than either Canada or the European Union. So that's good news. But these tariffs were good leverage. And in fact, one of the reasons it took so long to pass USMCA in Congress was that congressional representatives and senators said, we're not going to take up USMCA until the administration eliminates the steel and aluminum tariffs on Mexico and Canada. You know, we can't have an agreement, a new trade agreement with them when they still have retaliatory tariffs with us. The reason we have those retaliatory tariffs is because of the because of these steel and aluminum tariffs. So the U.S. eventually removed those tariffs, and the same day they were removed, our tariff in Mexico fell back to 20%. And so we are now in much better shape.
Now, Matt, Cam Quarles is going to discuss China in more depth here later in this particular podcast. But for yourself, watching the international relations and all these trading relations go about here day in and day out, do you feel that we will see a significant trade agreement with this phase one deal? Is that going to push forward more progress on a complete trade deal with China and a good opportunity for not only the potato industry, but agriculture as a whole and the U.S. Trading relations as well?
Yes, I do. Of course, I'll defer to Cam. It'll be interesting to see what Cam says on this podcast. But it's certainly a step in the right direction. We were just heading down a dark path where as retaliation after retaliation, if this phase one agreement had not gone into effect, China was planning to put on additional tariffs on U.S. fries, potato flakes, and other dehy, an additional 5% tariff. So right now we're paying a 15% tariff in China. Our tariff on December 15th of last year would have gone to 20%. So sales are made with pennies on the dollar. So if we have to pay an extra 5% over our competitors, that makes it that much more harder. So it's a really good thing that we've kind of taken the foot off the gas and we've kind of let a little air out of the balloon and are turning the corner and trying to find solutions here. So those additional 5% tariffs on dehy and other dehy flakes and fries did not go into effect. It remains to be seen what will happen with the other retaliatory tariffs that were imposed earlier. My understanding is that China has committed to purchase a lot of agricultural goods as part of this phase one tariff. Perhaps as a result of that, they will unilaterally lower some of those tariffs. And we certainly will be asking that, potatoes be included in that. So I think that's important. And we certainly hope to see this agreement advance. The other important aspect of this agreement is for 20 years, we've been trying to open the Chinese market for fresh potatoes from the United States. And I've gone to China, I can't tell you how many times on this issue. The last time I was there was last February. And last February, we were finally to the point where we were negotiating a market access agreement for Pacific Northwest shipping potatoes to go into potato chip factories in China. the agreement is done in principle. It's drafted. There are a handful of issues in that agreement that need to be finished and adjusted on certain pests and inspections. But it's almost down to three distinct issues. If we can get that done, we have a new opportunity to open the Chinese market and then hopefully expand it going ahead. But it's going to take political issues, a political will to do that. We had this agreement, this progress in February, and then last May, the talks hit the rocks, and we've been in limbo. So our hope is with this phase one agreement that all of a sudden we're heading back on the right direction, and we'll go back and head to China and try to polish this thing off and provide the U.S. Potato industry a new opportunity for exports.
Matt, we've seen a lot of issues in the protein sector in China in the aftermath of African swine fever and other countries in Asia and also in countries in Europe. How has African swine fever changed the trade opportunities for all U.S. agricultural exports?
Well, I think it remains to be seen, but China certainly, with being the most populous nation on earth, needs to feed itself. And you see its actions during that, where you hear about China buying farmland in Africa and trying to grow crops there. And, my understanding, I read something the other day that, maybe a fourth of all pigs died last year because of this. I mean, it's a really big issue. And I think that is very much concerned the Chinese government. And so as a result, where on principle you want to have a trade war and we're frustrated with each other, when it comes to feeding people and keeping stability in your country, if you don't have one of their primary staple foods, it certainly changes the dynamic of the negotiations. And I think that has come into play in some of these talks. I don't have any, that's just my personal opinion on that. But, it's our hope that in addition to purchasing more swine, because they certainly have reopened the market for that, is that we'll also expand to some other areas, especially potatoes.
Well, Matt, I think we've had a great conversation on the importance of trade and the hard work that you and your crew and, of course, the National Potato Council and its members have put all this hard work into, and things finally seem to be paying off for our producers in the countryside. Is there anything else that you would like to leave with our listeners here today before you get back to your work day out there in Seattle?
Well, I want to say that the potato industry does it right, and I think they deserve credit for this. 20 years ago, the potato industry had a lot of different voices on trade. You had state commissions all weighing in on their own ideas and the national groups working. And about 20 years ago, they all set that aside and said, let's speak with a united voice to the U.S. government on trade issues. And they deserve a lot of credit for that. And so we have key players and both Potatoes USA and the National Potato Council, people in the state commissions, trade committees, growers, who all work together and are on email lists and provide feedback and allows us to speak with a unified voice. And as a result of that, it's very easy for the U.S. government to know where the potato industry stands and what our priorities are. Not all industries are that way. I work with many industries. And I think you see the results of that cooperation the benefits and the successes this industry is having on international trade, and they should be complimented for that.
Matt Lance, very well said. Again, he is the VP of Global Access with Bryant Christie, and very knowledgeable and a great advocate and resource for the potato industry. Matt, thank you so much for joining us, and I'll be looking forward to seeing you there at the Potato Expo in Las Vegas. Thanks for being with us here today.
All right. Thank you, Lane.
Thank you so much. Well, friends, don't go too far. We'll have more. We'll be discussing the trade opportunities and success that we've seen in the former TPP agreement, which the U.S. withdrew from. We'll be focusing on the agreement that the U.S. reached with Japan right after this.
Now,
Alrighty, friends, thanks for staying with us here today on the Eye on Potatoes podcast. We're going to continue to talk about trade and the importance that it plays for U.S. potato producers and the industry as a whole. Now we're going to turn our attention to Pasco, Washington. Joining us is the Vice President of Trade Affairs for the National Potato Council and President of Balcom & Moe Incorporated is Mr. Jared Balcom. Jared, how are things going today in the state of Washington?
They're going good today in the state of Washington. It's a little bit cold, but it's January, so it's expected.
Well, and with that, I'm sure things are pretty busy at the office here today, and a lot of things going on out in the countryside. But maybe for our friends tuning into the podcast today, could you give us a brief overview of your family operation and the history that it has in the state of Washington and in the potato industry itself?
I'm a fourth-generation farmer here in Washington State. We've been doing this going on a lot of years. I don't know. I'd have to add that up. But we farm our main crop here is potatoes. We do both fresh market potatoes and processed potatoes for the that get turned into French fries. So we've been doing this a long time, and we enjoy it, and hope to continue to do it for an extended period of time.
And as we've discussed in depth here on today's podcast, talking about trade, Matt Lance just discussed the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement and touched on those 232 steel and aluminum tariffs and how those have been used as a negotiating tool by the Trump administration in the current trade climate. We are going to focus now a little more on the Asian Pacific area in terms of trade. We look back to the end of the Obama administration when the Trans-Pacific Partnership, of course, the 11-country trade deal that was really going to be a big opportunity for U.S. agriculture to be a part of a multilateral trade agreement. Well, when President Trump took office, he withdrew the U.S. from the TPP process. And then we had to start over with bilateral trade deals. Jared, could you just maybe share a little bit about that Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal and the opportunities the agreement did provide producers? But of course, we'll jump back into the work that the NPC has put forth for these current bilateral trade agreements.
You bet. Yeah. So on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, there was a little bit of frustration from the ag world on that because we were one of the lead negotiators in that. So we, the United States, kind of steered the ship in some regards to that on ag, and then we withdrew from it. And it wasn't just, it was both presidential candidates at that moment that both said they weren't going to sign it, unfortunately. So the thing went forward, and we were not included in it. And so what that did to us, unfortunately, was it put us at a disadvantage where those tariffs on potato products, both fresh, frozen, and dehy, within 1 year, we were at a higher tariff rate than the rest of the 11 countries. And so it put us at an extreme disadvantage going into that country, and especially Japan. Japan is what is a huge market for us. It is number one or number two for frozen and dehydrated products going out of the United States. So we all of a sudden negotiated a deal that weren't a part of it, and we're at a disadvantage. And so luckily, though, they instigated a bilateral agreement, which was a quiet conversation that a lot of people really weren't aware of. And then all of a sudden they announced that they had come to an agreement. And fortunately for us, and as a surprise for us, which is a good thing, it in essence mimicked TPP. Now, the long-term benefit of that is this is a direct agreement between Japan. And so is that a benefit or not? That's, you know, to be seen. But the best part about it is that it is taking our 8.5% tariffs on frozen and immediately bringing that down to the TPP. So we are at a we're at the same advantage as the rest of the countries out there. and it is taking the 20% tariff on dehydrated product and eliminating that over 5 years. So it mimicked the TPP. So even though we weren't a part of it, the original signing, we are in essence a part of it now. So we are not at a disadvantage anymore, and it's a big deal for us. There's, you know, we were calculating that we were going to lose $150 million a year not being a part of TPP, and now we're right on par. So it's a huge win for the potato industry moving forward with one of our largest trading partners.
Again, that was good news. That trade deal was signed back on October 7th, 2019, between the U.S. and Japan. Now the U.S. is focusing, or at least the potato industry is focusing on the trade opportunities with Vietnam. That was one of those countries that was a part of TPP. How big of a market is Vietnam for the U.S. potato industry?
Currently, it's a good market. But there's a lot of potential there. The dehy and frozen and fresh industry sees huge potential moving forward. And so with us being able to get these tariffs on par and get these eliminated over a period of time, we feel that this gives us a great growth opportunity in all three sectors, which benefits, you know, growers, right back to the growers over a period of time. So it's actually a nice thing to see that we didn't just stop with Japan and that the we're continuing to move forward and kind of address each issue full steam ahead. So we see it as a huge potential moving forward.
There's been a lot of ground gained in negotiations with China, and Cam Quarles is going to discuss China in depth a little more in our final section of today's podcast. But as a producer and looking at what the trade climate has been over the past few years, do you feel a little more optimistic now that we have seen the Japan trade deal and at least a phase one trade deal that's going to be signed January 15th? Does that help you sleep a little bit better at night? What are your feelings when you're sitting down at the kitchen table discussing these issues with your family and your business associates?
I think it's positive. You know, there's been a lot of rhetoric and a lot of back and forth and a lot of he said, she said kind of things with China over an extended period of time. And so the fact that there's actually a phase one in place, that they were able to agree to something. Now, the effect on ag in this phase one is pretty insignificant, but it means that they're at the table, and it means that they're actually discussing things and trying to work through challenges and issues. And they were able to come to some solutions. You know, over the last probably 10 years that I've been involved with this, China has always been a conversation, but there's never been a significant movement on that. And so the fact that they're actually putting pen to paper on something means that that they're actually having real discussions and trying to find solutions. So I feel way better about China than I have in the last 10 years, just because there's actually some movement and things are getting done. Now, what's going to happen in phase two, you know, that's still to be determined, but we know, and there's been a lot of questions and comments and direction asked from FAS on what needs to happen and what makes sense. And so I think this is a positive thing moving forward, and I think we have some momentum to be able to keep going and actually get some solid solutions figured out. That's the message that I carry forward here at the dinner table and within our businesses, that we're gaining, and it's not just conversation anymore. There's actually something to put down on paper.
Jared, as the Vice President of Trade Affairs for the National Potato Council, you've also had opportunities to serve on the Agriculture Producers Advisory Committee, which shares input with the Secretary of Agriculture along with the U.S. Trade Representative's Office regarding U.S. trade policy and also the impacts trade has on the potato industry. What's it like being a part of that, putting more of your precious time and volunteer leadership to use in Washington, D.C. and on the international scale?
Well, to be honest with you, so I just was put on that that committee, and so I'm kind of 4 months into it, and a year from now I can probably give you a lot stronger opinion on it or more information on it. But I have been involved in multiple conference calls, and what it does is it was an act from Congress where before they, you know, the USDA is required to take input from the people that it affects before they do any trade agreements. And so we're fortunate that the Potato Council has a seat at that table. There's 20 producers from around the United States that get to sit down and talk and give their input and thought on any trade negotiations that are going on. And so, you know, what happens is that when there is a conversation going with a foreign country, they call us and ask us what our input is and say, these are the challenges and what makes sense and what doesn't make sense. And so it gives us a kind of first in place position to talk directly with the people that are making the decisions and are working on these challenges, and kind of have real dialogue on what our challenges are, what we see as potential, and kind of give a little bit of direction and input. And so we think that it's in the little 4 months that I've been there, I think it's a pretty good position that the council or the potato industry has and that is able to participate. Now, I'm kind of new to it, so I'm listening more than I'm speaking, but I think it's going to be a huge benefit for us. And we've had this position for a long time, and the person that was there before me did a phenomenal job and kind of decided that he wanted to step back and told me that I was doing it. So that's kind of where we're at right now. I haven't been doing it long enough to speak extremely intelligent on it, but that's what I know.
Serving on the executive committee for the National Potato Council, focusing on these trade affairs, what are some of those other key areas and nations that the potato industry is focusing on to develop trading relationships with or bettering trade relationships with at this time as we move into the first part of 2020?
So, of course, our number one, or I wouldn't say number one, but our key markets that we focus on in our committee is Japan, and we've already spoke on that. The USMCA, which is the new agreement between Mexico. We have a long-standing challenge with Mexico, and so we continue to work on that. We put a lot of time and energy on trying to access that market and get us past those first 20 kilometers. Currently, we're only able to ship fresh product into the first 20 kilometers of Mexico, and we're working diligently to try to get that expanded and move forward. So Japan, Mexico, we're continuing to monitor the China and continuing to give input on China on getting chipping potato access into China. We've worked very diligently with South Korea. We've had huge gains in South Korea in the last 5 years, and we're continuing to monitor that. We've had gains into Indonesia, and we continue to monitor that. We've had some challenges on import permits that we think we've worked through, and so we're gaining steam there. Of course, Canada. We have some ministerial exemption challenges that we've been able to address, but we're continuing to beat on that and make that a little bit more seamless. And then, of course, we have the Japan Phase 2 issue that we're, that we're diligently a part of. And those are kind of our key markets, and those are the things that we could just continue to work on. And even markets that are open, we have issues that pop up, and so we spend a lot of time and energy on trying to clean those up so that there's no delay or slowdown in our export business.
Well, Jared, there's definitely a lot of work to be done, but thanks to all that volunteer leaders like yourself that are part of the industry and the work that the National Potato Council does in Washington, D.C., headway is being seen, and success is definitely in the future for the industry on these trade deals. Jared, I know you're busy there in Pasco today. Anything else that you'd like to share with our listeners on the podcast today before we let you go?
No, I think we're good. Just know that there's a very significant or a large team that is working on behalf of the potato growers of the United States on trade. And we recognize and know that this is a very huge, valuable part of the potato industry. And there's quite a few people that are working hard, very intelligent people that are working hard, trying to increase our export market and continue to hold on what we have currently.
All right, Jared. Hey, thank you so much for sharing more in-depth information on the trade opportunities that the potato industry has here in the United States. Friends, on the podcast, don't go away. We're going to dive into more discussions surrounding China with the CEO of the National Potato Council, Cam Quarles, right after this. As promised, friends, we are back today with the CEO of the National Potato Council, Cam Quarles. We're going to continue to talk about trade. Cam, how are things looking out in Washington, D.C. today?
Lane, they're great. Glad to be here.
Well, we've had some great conversation for today's show between Matt Lance discussing the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement, the Mexico Fresh issue that's held up in the courts in Mexico, and of course, we just talked with Jared Balcom about a lot of issues, especially in the Asia-Pacific region. And all of these podcasts, we've discussed just a little bit on China, and we've seen a lot of movement the past few months, and especially moving into 2020, we're going to see that phase one trade deal signed between the U.S. and China here on January 15th. There's a lot of opportunity for the potato industry, from the U.S. potato industry as we look to China. What are some of these priorities and work that you and your team are continuing to work on out in Washington, D.C. on the China trade front, Cam?
Well, exactly as you say, Lane, China, just given the size of the overall market, I think everyone in U.S. agriculture is focused on China. Getting the market open in a durable way is really the challenge for everyone. You've seen some of our friends in the soybean industry. They sell a lot into China. Pork is a big deal. Some processed products go into China currently from the United States. They're roughly about 100 million in overall U.S. exports to China every year. But we really don't have the full suite of all of our products that are available to go into China. We're talking about full chipping potato access. We're talking about fresh access. If you had that, the entirety of all of the production that U.S. The potato industry can generate going into China, eligible to access their market, we think they could easily be a top five, maybe even a top three market overall for us.
So as we look at that phase one aspect of this U.S.-China trade deal, there's really not much for the potato sector, but there could be some ground worked on in that phase two agreement. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah, that's right. The phase one deal, really what it does, Lane, is it stops the back and forth retaliation that has occurred over the past couple of years. It kind of puts a pause on that. You know, even though it's primarily processed product that we're sending into China, we had a very significant vulnerability. We're talking about potentially losses of up to $40 million a year, and that's on $100 million annually in exports. So 40% of our exports could have been compromised if these ratcheting tariffs kept going up and up and up. And so we're glad that phase one halts that. It takes the temperature down, allows things to stabilize a bit. Now, as you look forward, phase two gives us the opportunity to lock in potential market access, such as for our shipping potatoes. We've been working very closely with the U.S. government over a number of years to provide us with market access for chip. Then, as I said before, if we could get fresh access, you're really talking about a tremendous opportunity for U.S. potato producers looking into the future.
So with that fresh access, it's going to take a lot of diplomacy, a lot of meetings. Who are some of the other stakeholders that are going to be collaborating with the National Potato Council to have a voice in Washington, D.C., in the U.S. Trade Representative's office, and, of course, overseas in China?
Sure. So we're the National Potato Council is the lobbying arm. We're the ones who are doing the direct interaction with the federal government in terms of lobbying for policy modifications. On the export side, though, we rely very heavily on our partners at Potatoes USA, the U.S. Potato Board, in providing us with accurate data, background, information about the overall scope of the entirety of the international export markets, and particularly what the opportunities would be in China. They're the marketing experts, and so we're going to work hand in glove with them to see exactly what we need to do to really move into that market in a strong way. And then also it's going to be with our state partners. The heavily export dependent states that are out there, they'll be working with their individual members of Congress to nudge public policy along to make sure that China access is a priority. Almost all of the agriculture issues hinge on two things. It's the size of the tariffs going into a market, and then it's also, can you deal with pest and disease issues that a country that you want to export to may claim that you have, either real or imagined. Sometimes the imagined ones are simply because they want to protect their market. Sometimes they place huge tariffs on their market to keep you out. And so we're fighting those battles, and we work very closely with the Office of the Trade Representative, the Department of Agriculture, and even all the way up to the White House to knock those two issues down and open a market. That goes for a country like China. That goes for across the board. That's pretty standard operating procedure on how you really get exports moving.
Now, we did receive very good news. Jared and I just talked about this, of course. Back in early October, we did see that the U.S. and Japan signed a bilateral trade agreement, which was a relief for producers out in the countryside since the U.S. did not fully become a part since the U.S. decided not to be a part of the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal. Now, you mentioned there's also some more work to be done in terms of fresh exports to Japan as well, Cam.
There is. So, yeah, we were really happy that the administration was able to come to a tariff agreement with Japan. That's really the free trade agreement that you're talking about that was announced over the summertime and has just been ratified by Japan. Now, as we look forward, the way to fully open the Japanese market is to, much like the conversation we were having over China, is to lock in both enhanced access for chipping potatoes, but then also open their market, which is entirely closed to U.S. fresh potatoes. Think of this, Lane. It has been over 20 years ago that the U.S. first made their request of Japan to open their market to U.S. fresh potatoes. Fresh potatoes that are sent, that are exported around the world safely to other countries. There are people, there are staff members working on Capitol Hill and working down at the White House and in the Office of the Trade Representative who were not born when we first made that request. And now they're working on this issue. So that's how long it has been. And we have asked the Department of Agriculture, we've asked the Office of the Trade Representative, And we've gotten very good support from Capitol Hill to make fresh access a priority. This, if we get the Japan fresh access right, this could mean an additional $150 million a year in U.S. exports, U.S. potato exports. And that would be for an overall industry that's exporting roughly $900 million a year. That is a huge benefit. So we really want to focus a lot of energy on it. It's not going to be easy. It's not going to be a short process, but the benefits are there, and we can do it safely, and we think it'll benefit the Japanese consumer as well as U.S. potato farmers.
And Cam, as we continue on here with our conversation, what other top trade areas that should producers know as we move into 2020 and look at the international trade opportunities for U.S. potatoes?
Well, Lane, you had a good conversation with Matt Lance about the opportunities for fresh access to Mexico. Much like our conversation over Japan, we think that if the Mexican market were fully open in accordance with their obligations under the World Trade Organization, under NAFTA, and now under the USMCA, that market for U.S. exports could be $100-150 million annually, which would just be a huge benefit. Right now, the Mexican potato industry can't supply their own consumers in their entirety. We think it would be a tremendous benefit for those folks. It obviously would be a benefit for our U.S. potato farmers. And as long as this issue has drug on, all of the pest and disease issues have been dealt with, and now it's just a question of if the Mexican government is going to be able to adhere to its obligations under these trade agreements. We think the answer is obviously yes, and they just need to move quickly to make this happen. Otherwise, the message that they're sending is that they're just not serious about enhancing the trade relationship between the U.S. and Mexico. Mexico sends a huge amount of fruit and vegetable exports to the U.S. every year. Avocados, $2 billion worth of avocados come north to the U.S. But they're at the same time that their avocados were getting access, we were talking about our fresh potatoes. They have effectively done nothing in the interim as they built a $2 billion market in avocados here in the U.S. They've done nothing to reciprocate for potatoes. They've got to do it.
Cam, I know there's a lot of trade priorities, and it's exciting to see the progress that is being made on these trade deals to benefit U.S. producers. I want to give a shout-out, though, for the D.C. fly-in that's going to happen February 24th through the 27th. Could you share more about the important opportunity that producers can play in advocating for the potato industry and all they gain from flying out to Washington, D.C. and learning more about what you do in D.C. and also just having a boots-on-the-ground approach in meeting elected officials and their staff?
Absolutely. You said it, Lane. The absolute best advocates for this industry are the farmers from across the country who are so knowledgeable about their own activities and can make such a great case on why we need to engage on these priority issues. Trade is huge, but you've also got nutrition, you've got ag labor reform, you have a suite of issues that if Congress, if the administration can get them right, they mean a heck of a lot of jobs here in the United States, tremendous economic activity, and consumers across the country will benefit. I think folks who may not pay attention to Washington, D.C. every day of their lives may feel that it's such a complicated place, and does anything really get done here? The answer is yes, but it gets done because people will engage in things like our fly-in. They'll become knowledgeable about these policies. They'll have relationships with their congressmen, their senators. they'll know who some of the regulators are who have a tremendous impact on whether or not we have access to vital crop protection tools. The folks who engage on a regular basis, I think they very quickly realize that Washington, D.C. isn't that complicated. What it is really starved for knowledge. And the common sense that our producers can provide to an environment that often maybe it's lacking a little bit in common sense, it's really sorely needed. And so it's terrific when folks engage in the fly-in. They get a crash course in all of the policies that impact them. We take them up on the Hill, hear from key policymakers. We heard from both the chairman of the House and Senate Agriculture Committees at the last fly-in. We hear from key policymakers such as the Secretary of Agriculture at the 2019 fly-in. And then they are armed with the tools necessary to go up on the Hill, go to the agencies, and really make a strong case for this terrific industry.
Well, of course, the National Potato Council standing up for potatoes on Capitol Hill each and every day. Cam, before we wrap up today's conversation, is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners on the podcast today?
Just excited that that we were able to do it, Lane, and certainly we want folks to, if they've got the time and the inclination, we would love to see them at the fly-in coming up here at the end of February.
No doubt. And for more information on that fly-in and all that the National Potato Council does for the industry, just visit nationalpotatocouncil.org. Well, friends, that's going to do it for today's Eye on Potatoes podcast. Please subscribe on your Apple or Android devices and make sure and share it on social media so we can get the word out about all that the National Potato Council is doing for you and the industry. That'll do it for today. I'm Lane Nordlund. We'll catch you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to the National Potato Council's Eye on Potatoes podcast with host Lane Nordlund. For more information, visit nationalpotatocouncil.org and make sure to subscribe to the podcast today.